This is Poetry Off the Shelf from the Poetry Foundation, June 13th, 2012. I'm Curtis Fox. This week, our new Poet Laureate. In 2007, Natasha Trethewey won the Pulitzer Prize for Poetry for her book, Native Guard, and we did a Poetry Off the Shelf with her shortly afterwards. Last week, the Library of Congress announced that Natasha Trethewey was the new Poet Laureate of the United States, and now we're going to do another program about her, but this time with Dana Gioia. Dana Gioia is a poet and critic and a former corporate executive. His work has often appeared in Poetry Magazine, and from 2002 to 2009, he served as the chairman of the National Endowment for the Arts. Hi, Dana.
Hi.
So the outgoing poet laureate is Philip Levine, and the one before him was W.S. Merwin. Natasha Trethewey is comparatively a spring chicken in her mid-40s. What do you make of the choice?
I think Natasha Trethewey is a fine choice, I mean, for a whole bunch of reasons. First of all, she's a superb poet, and that is first and foremost the criterion, you know, for choosing the poet laureate. But also, she is the first Southerner since the very first poet laureate, Robert Penn Warren. So, you know, you really have to go back a quarter of a century before the Southern region has been represented at the Library of Congress. And I think that's a wonderful thing because the South has been this rich, you know, part of American literature. Secondly, you know, she's somebody who I think is very contemporary, not in the ways that people normally understand that word in the poetry world, but she has a white father, an African-American mother, and so who were married, I believe, when interracial marriage was illegal in at least one of the states that they lived.
Yeah.
And what Natasha Trethewey represents is the new South, you know, the South that sort of is moving into the future. And her poetry really reflects this rich thematics that comes from personal and public life. So I think that she's a refreshing and welcome choice.
Mm-hmm. Anything else you could tell us about her biography, about her poetry?
Well, you know, the other thing about Trethewey's, you know, poetry is that, you know, you think of her in thematically sort of moving beyond, you know, let's say the thematics of the 50s and 60s. I mean, this is, you know, really the, you know, writing about 21st century America. But it's the same way in terms of the style of her poetry. I mean, she writes in free verse, she writes in form, she writes autobiographically, she writes narratively. You know, she's somebody who is really takes all of the options that are available to a poet today and uses them for expressive purpose. And so it's so refreshing to be beyond the poetry wars.
Mm-hmm. She's not part of a particular school or...
Well, you know, she's not part of a particular school, but there's a group of younger African-American poets with whom, you know, she had a kind of writer's circle. And so they read and critiqued each other's work. And so she's not part of a school, but she's part of a kind of creative team. And I think that that's kind of a nice human touch too.
Mm-hmm. Now let's play one of her best known poems. And you alluded to this earlier. It has to do with her having a white father and a black mother. It's called Miscegenation, which of course is that very ugly word for children born of different races. Natasha Trethewey was recorded at the Key West Literary Seminar in 2010. Here's her introduction to the poem, followed by the poem.
Yesterday, I mentioned Heraclitus, geography is fate, and my own particular geography has with it, of course, a bunch of particular laws. And I always mention when I read this poem, in case we forget that this is not such ancient history, that just under 15 years ago, the state of Alabama voted to remove the anti-miscegenation laws from their state constitution. And though they did get the vote to get rid of it, about 40-some percent of the population still wanted to keep those laws so that at least symbolically it could be said that parents like mine couldn't be married legally and people like me born legally in the state. Miscegenation. In 1965, my parents broke two laws of Mississippi. They went to Ohio to marry, returned to Mississippi. They crossed the river into Cincinnati, a city whose name begins with a sound like sin, the sound of wrong, miss in Mississippi. A year later, they moved to Canada, followed a route the same as slaves, the train slicing the white glaze of winter, leaving Mississippi. Faulkner's Joe Christmas was born in winter, like Jesus, given his name for the day he was left at the orphanage, his race unknown, in Mississippi. My father was reading War and Peace when he gave me my name. I was born near Easter, 1966, in Mississippi. When I turned 33, my father said, "It's your Jesus year. You're the same age he was when he died." It was spring, the hills green in Mississippi. I know more than Joe Christmas did. Natasha is a Russian name, though I'm not. It means Christmas child, even in Mississippi.
That was Natasha Trethewey reading Miscegenation. Now, you mentioned her as being a new poet of the South. And even though she lives in the South, she lives in Atlanta, and she teaches at Emory. But she's frequently uncomfortable with the South and is very open about that discomfort.
Well, you know, I think Miscegenation is, you know, a perfect example of what makes Trethewey's poetry so good. She takes her personal history, you know, which is tied to this public history of racism and segregation, and she weaves that around a family history, a political history, and even brings you into Russia, and finally even into myth and religion, you know, with the name Natasha, a Christmas child.
Yeah.
You know, she's, as it were, a person born in violation of the racist laws of her home state, but her father's also reading Tolstoy, you know, mm-hmm. when she's doing this. What I would wish for Natasha Trethewey is that she is seen as this poet who's talking about America's history, about African-American struggles in this country, but that she's ultimately thought of as a poet.
Yeah.
And not a Southern poet, not an African-American poet, not a woman poet, although she is all of those things, but first and foremost as a poet, which is to say, someone who speaks of our existence in all of its poignancy, its complexity, and its pain.
Yeah, I wanted to play another poem for you that gets away from race. And race is important in her work, but maybe her major theme is family and memory. This poem evokes the memory of her mother, who was murdered when Natasha Trethewey was a young woman, I believe by her second husband. This poem is called Lyman, and here's her introduction.
Lyman is the actual threshold of a door, but it's also the threshold to an emotional or psychological state. Lyman. All day I've listened to the industry of a single woodpecker whirring the catalpa tree just outside my window. Hard at his task, his body is a hinge, a door knocker to the cluttered house of memory in which I can almost see my mother's face. She is there again beyond the tree, its slender pods and heart-shaped leaves hanging wet sheets on the line, each one a thin white screen between us. So insistent is this woodpecker, I'm sure he must be looking for something else, not simply the beetles and grubs inside, but some other gift the tree might hold. All day he's been at work, tireless, making the green hearts flutter.
That was Natasha Trethewey reading Lyman. And the recording comes from that same reading at the Key West Literary Seminar in 2010. So, Dana, this seems to me, to your point, to be a bit more typical of a lot of her stuff. It's a very evocative memory poem.
I think the key to Trethewey's style is that she's not simply doing a kind of autobiographical statement of this is what happened, this, that, or the other, but she creates, you know, a fabric of experience that touches on a fabric of recollection, and it's the interplay of the two.
Mm.
You know, and it's that delicacy, that artistry, even that authenticity that makes it powerful. Because when we remember in the context of a present tense that somehow evokes it. You know, but she is, even in this painfully autobiographical poem, she is a lyric poet, you know, a poet who gives us what it is like to be a certain person in a certain place at a certain time in memorable language.
Let me ask you about the institution of poet laureate and how you think that is working. What is its role? How is it done? Do you think it's been a successful tradition?
You know, I've had a lot of differing thoughts about the office of the poet laureate, and I was actually there at the very beginning when Robert Penn Warren was installed as the first poet laureate, and they had this gathering of all the previous poetry consultants, and each of them invited a young poet, and I happened to be one of the young poets who was invited.
Uh-huh.
And I have to say, when it began, I felt rather cynical about the office, and it struck me as America was sort of emulating the British, and they mm-hmm. have a king, and so they have a court poet. We're a democracy. We shouldn't, I thought at that point, have a court poet. And the first few poet laureates, I do think, were largely ceremonial figures, and they didn't do very much. And then we had two poets who really transformed the office. The first was Josef Brodsky. And when Brodsky started talking about these grandiose plans, people mocked him, you know, poetry in supermarkets, poetry in hotels.
Yeah, I remember that, yeah.
But, you know, Brodsky, and actually aided by a guy named Andy Carroll, began putting in anthologies in hotel rooms and began doing anthologies that were given away. And there was a vision there, and I think it's so important that poetry is really for people. It's not just for professors. It's not just for poets. You know, poetry should be reaching a broad audience. I mean, maybe not everyone, but, you know, a broader audience. And then Robert Pinsky came next, and Pinsky completed what I would say is the democratization of the office.
Hmm.
And those two men, I think, transformed it. And to a greater or lesser extent, since then, it has been a public office. I mean, Ted Kooser created his, you know, poetry column in newspapers.
Yeah.
Kay Ryan went to community colleges.
Sure.
Billy Collins did sort of a high school curriculum, Poetry 180. And these things have been extraordinarily important in the United States. You know, the office has developed and matured into something that is truly irreplaceable in American culture.
You can read poems by Natasha Trethewey and Dana Gioia on our website, poetryfoundation.org. Dana Gioia's latest book has the wonderful title, Pity the Beautiful. Let us know what you think of this program. Email us at podcast@poetryfoundation.org. The theme music for this program comes from the Claudia Quintet. For Poetry Off the Shelf, I'm Curtis Fox. Thanks for listening.